This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, it's Friday, May 26th, and as we head into a three-day weekend, we're bringing you a very special program from FRC's 14th annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors Briefing here in Washington, D.C. The conference began on Wednesday evening and just wrapped up earlier this afternoon. It was an outstanding event, so good, I wanted you to have an opportunity to hear some of the inspiring and encouraging messages. In just a moment, you'll hear from best-selling author and messianic rabbi Jonathan Kahn as he brings a fascinating message of how to understand the times in which we live today and learning to see world events in the light of biblical prophecy. Also on the program, Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, he shares about how he has personally witnessed God at work in our nation. And leading off the show today is a message from pastor-turned-congressman, Representative Mark Walker of North Carolina. He is in his second term of office. He is already leading the influential Republican Study Committee. And he shared with our pastors his testimony of hearing God's call to leave traditional ministry for the mission field of national politics. I think you'll be really blessed and encouraged by his story. But the main takeaway from all of our speakers was this: the message that we heard over and over throughout the briefing was God has given us a reprieve, an opportunity to see America turned around. Sound familiar? We've been talking a lot about that here on Washington Watch. This is not the time to take a break. Not the time to kick back and take it easy. Rather, it's the time to stand without hesitation for biblical truth and work to change the hearts and minds of people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. By the way, you can watch all of the message from our fantastic lineup of speakers, pastors like Mark Batterson, Jensen Franklin, and Dr. Tony Evans, all by visiting TonyPerkins.com. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. All of the programs, of course, are archived there, but we also have a link to the entire lineup of speakers from this year's Pastors Conference. So check it out, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins, you can keep up with me. All right, here's Congressman Mark Walker, a frequent guest here on Washington Watch. He represents the 6th Congressional District of North Carolina, and as I said, he serves as the chairman of the House Republican Study Committee.
It is a privilege to be with you guys this morning, with certainly Tony Perkins and General Jerry Boykin. What an honor it is to be just to have, I actually feel like I'm back home with so many pastor friends. Something that God has put in our hearts is, how do we bridge the divide? How do we build bridges? How do we talk about policy, conservative policy? Because I've learned this. With effective conservatism, if the policy never reaches the audience, then how good is it really? What do we have to do in our evangelical circles to bridge those divides, to bridge those gaps? 2 months ago, for the first time ever, I partnered with Senator Tim Scott. We brought 85 chancellors of historical black colleges and universities. I've launched the first paid internship for HBCU students. I sit on the panel at North Carolina A&T in Greensboro, the largest HBCU in the country. It is no longer, in my opinion, a place that we can just sit on the sidelines without being intentional in our engagement when it comes to our fellow brothers and sisters in our different cultures. That means surrender and sacrifice, and that's where I'd like to spend the next 7 or 8 minutes to maybe give you a call from the scriptures today that comes out of Matthew 16, 24, and 25. You guys know the passage when it's talking about being a follower of Christ. He gives us three things: to deny yourself, to take up your cross, and to follow Jesus. And I can have about 5 minutes. Let's break that down. Sometimes it's a good refresher course. It's good to go over the fundamentals. If you look at the Major League Baseball players, the thing they do every day is they take batting practice, take a few ground balls. So let's review a little bit today as we share just for briefly. Number one, deny yourself. I don't know anybody in the room that comes natural. It doesn't come natural for me. Now, what does that mean to deny yourself? Well, look at this passage. And in most of the years, I've looked at this as all one piece. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow Jesus. But the more I've looked at that in the last couple of years, the more I've studied that, I look at that as three separate stages, three separate steps. Number one, deny yourself. Well, first of all, surrender your will. Jesus is the perfect model there in the garden when he does exactly that, denying yourself. I think part of denying ourselves is to put away those things which sometimes appeals to the flesh, and there is no better way, in my opinion, than through fasting and prayer. Now, I will tell you this, I don't share this a lot of times with the media, but I've never started a day in Washington, D.C. that it didn't start in the Word of God, and here's why. I do not trust my instincts. When I'm faced with the decisions, as you are each and every day, and the enemy is coming at you full force, because in this city, much like yours, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, as Ephesians 6:12. What do we wrestle against? We wrestle against principalities, against spiritual darkness. That is why we must stay close to the Lord, but that comes with denying yourself. Number two, take up your cross. The imagery of that, that's pretty heavy, isn't it? That God has a cross for each and every person in this room today. Sometimes it's temporary, sometimes it's long term. As a pastor, where you have been in the hospital room of a new child that was born with a disability, the overwhelming, the emotion that's in that room, that God has literally chosen that family to carry that cross. Sometimes it's more temporary. I remember, as I said earlier, my father being my hero. My dad was, and still is, a pastor. He's a prayer warrior. Specifically, one time, I remember myself and my two younger brothers, we were out in the yard and doing something that we shouldn't be doing, which was shooting each other with BB guns. Mom always said, you'd better be careful, because if you're not careful, you're going to what? Exactly right. Well, one day I was returning fire to my two younger brothers who had just shot me in the legs. That was the rule, to shoot low. When they jumped in behind a big pile of pine straw, a piece of plywood was their border, and I shot. And about the time I pulled that little Daisy rifle BB gun, I heard an awful scream. And out from the side came my brother, who was running to me. I ran to him, I jerked his hand down, and I looked at his eye, and it was so full of blood it was almost black, dark crimson. Took him to our little hospital there in the panhandle of Florida. They took him over to the University of West Florida really quickly, and we finally got a hold of my father, who was performing a funeral. We got over to the hospital, and the doctor came and he said, I don't have good news for you folks. He said, the optic nerve is just one nerve, and it controls sight to both eyes. One eye looks like a shattered window pane, but he could lose sight in both eyes. So as we realized that we'd be in the hospital overnight, my father decided to ride back across to Little Milton, Florida, about 20 minutes from the hospital, across Interstate 10 Bridge. And just on the other side, there's a rest area there. As we got over the side, he pulled off, and I was cowarding in the back. I didn't even want to face my father, obviously still to this day the most sobering point of my life. But he began to pray. And as I listened to him pray as a 14-year-old boy, I could see the tear running down the side of his face. But I will never forget his words. He said, Father God, if this is our cross that we must bear to serve you more, we accept it. If it's your design that Clay be blind the rest of his life and we help take care of him, or if it allows us to reach more people for the cause of Christ, then we accept that. He said, my heart, my prayer is that you would heal Clay. We went on, came back that night, and the next morning the doctor came in and he told my father, he said, you must be those praying kind of people. And he says, I can't explain this, but your son's going to have 20/20 vision in both eyes. See, we deny ourselves, we take up our cross. Then there's a third step. It's to follow Jesus. We meet people all the time that they make it through those first two steps, but at that point, that cross is just too heavy to bear. I think of the rich young ruler who Jesus encountered. Have I not from my youth kept all this? I've denied myself. I've carried my cross. But to make the last decision to follow Jesus, Lord, that's tough. Every morning I read Jeremiah 39:18. I love this verse. It said, I will surely deliver you, and you will not fall by the sword, but your life shall be a prize to you. Why? Because you have put your trust in me. Early in my business days, I worked in the automobile business in management, finance and management at 22, 23 years old. Went out for the National Automobile Dealers Association there in Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, Baptist preacher's kid in small south town, going to Las Vegas, Nevada, that was quite the cultural experience. But I kept seeing this big billboard said, Danny Gans, Entertainer of the Year, 10 out of 12 years. So I said, I'm going to do a little reading on this guy. The more I read, the more I became fascinated with him because of his journey. He grew up in Southern California, destined to be a Major League Baseball player. Made it all the way to AAA, leading the AAA Pacific Coast League in home runs. When there was a collision, there was an injury, never made it back. He was angry, he was bitter, he was upset with God. And sometimes we hear that, listen, hey, trials and tribulations, they make you stronger. Well, not necessarily. You and I have run across people that made him more sour. To this day, they carry that bitterness. And that's where he was at first. God, I've done all this, I've been a witness for you. Make a long story short because of my time, Danny had this unique gift. Not only could he mimic any entertainer, he could actually sing like them as well. Everybody from Frank Sinatra to Michael Jackson, he could just deliver on it. And amazing, amazing stuff. But God led him through different places that he became the Las Vegas Entertainer of the Year in front of millions of people over 20 years. He never closed a show that he didn't share his faith in Jesus Christ. In fact, the only CD he ever made, the title track is called As Far As You Can See. And it talks about it's not how much light you can carry when you know whose voice you can trust. To deny yourself, to take up your cross, and to follow Jesus. See, because human wisdom, it doesn't make sense when God tells us that he's able to do exceedingly more than we could ever hope or dream. At the same time, we're denying ourselves, we're taking up our cross, and we're following Jesus. Many of you, in fact, I would imagine that each and every one of you this morning have been through the fire at some point. And in ministry, sometimes it's the people that you help the most that bite the hardest. You know what I'm talking about. And it's painful, and it's hurtful. But do not let that deter you from the hope that God has for you in your life. I remember going through a very heartbreaking ministry situation myself. Thought we were done. Really completely just upset. God, how could you let something so unfair, unjust, and ungodly happen? Through that, God allowed us to start a church. And I remember specifically looking back at that time, little Cross Point Church. And we had a little sign that we put out in the ditch and a little arrow to this elementary school. It said, meet with us at Cross Point Church. And I looked down at my shoes. And just months earlier, it was the same shoes that had stood before thousands of people. Today, we may have 40 show up on this Sunday morning. But I looked down at my shoes, and God, it's like he tapped me on the shoulder. He said, okay, I can use you now. Sometimes, God wants us to leave pretty wide margins in our life because he wants to do something incredibly, even supernatural. But sometimes, we put those parameters on God, not allowing him to do something amazing. Sometimes, that turn is amazing to the right, to the left. I have a dear mother who has survived 2 bouts of cancer. She's never let us quit anything. Keep up the fight. Paul writes to the church of Galatia in Galatians 6:9, don't grow weary in well-doing, for in due season you will reap if you do not faint. God bless you. Thanks for letting me have a few minutes of your time today.
That was Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina. As mentioned earlier, he serves as the chairman of the House Republican Study Committee. All right, don't go away. When we come back, Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri is here. Stay tuned for more Washington Watch.
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. With a new administration in place, America is primed for change. Seize the moment to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Dr. Alveda King, Benjamin Watson, and many more. Plus, don't miss the opportunity to network and meet with organizations and other values voters to discuss the most pressing issues of our day, including religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, and more. On October 13th through 15th, join us for the premier conservative event in the country. Register now at the early bird rate of $99 until May 31st. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Imagine being threatened by the government for reading a magazine article. This is exactly what Don Vanderboon, owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, experienced when USDA inspectors threatened to shut down his operation because of reading material that they found in his company break room, which defended biblical marriage. Mr. Vanderboon's employees were well aware of the material and of the company's publicly stated Christian principles and had no objections. As we all know, religious liberty is an indelible thread woven into the fabric of America. Without it, the American experiment will fail. Yet time and time again, the freedom of Americans to believe and live out those beliefs has been attacked by government action. Now more than ever, our first freedom of religious liberty needs protection. Watch a special program hosted by FRC President Tony Perkins, where you'll hear from real people whose freedom to believe has been affected in real ways, including Mr. Vanderboon himself. Go to frc.org/believe to watch this special presentation.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. We just wrapped up our annual Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing here in Washington, D.C. Great event. Pastors from across the nation came, and we heard from some members of Congress, some of our leaders on Capitol Hill, along with a number of pastors. Just bringing you a couple of the highlights. Jonathan Kahn, still to come. But one of our speakers was Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri. He is the Senate Values Action Team co-chair, an organization that we helped establish and work with very closely on Capitol Hill, also on the Select Committee on Intelligence. Here's what Senator Roy Blunt had to share with the pastors.
Well, great to be here. I got here in time to hear Congressman Walker and in time to realize that when you're following a Baptist preacher talking to a room full of preachers, that may be a pretty tough assignment. But Congressman Walker did a great job here, like he's doing a great job every day. Great to be here with Watchmen on the Wall. You know, it's an important time to pray, but it's also an important time to put feet to our prayers. You know, God expects us to have a plan. He just doesn't expect us to rely on our plan. That doesn't mean he doesn't expect us to have one. When I was a few years ago when my mother died, I was going to speak at her memorial service, and Congressman Walker mentioned he was a pastor. I'm not a pastor, but I like pastors. I'm also not a lawyer, by the way, which is usually a pretty good thing to mention. When I was going to speak at my mom's memorial service, I was looking at her Bible, and she had written right on the first page of her Bible something that many of you believe and feel, but it was important to me when I saw it in my mom's Bible. Which was, work like everything is up to you and pray like everything is up to God. And I'm not there all the time, but I'll tell you, I know when I am there. I know those moments when I am doing everything I think I should be doing to get done what I think should be done, but when I am totally reliant on God's plan rather than my plan. And when my plan doesn't quite work out, I'm ready to look for the more important guidance than I would have otherwise to try to figure out what God's plan is. So this is a good time, I think, to be thinking about that. Now, we have a great moment and a great opportunity here But believe me, we are just on the edge of beginning to see things happen that you and I would want to see happen in Washington, that we'd want to see happen in our country. This is no time to step back. This is no time to think we have accomplished anything. We have just accomplished the opportunity to accomplish things if we are insistent that that happen. You know, in areas like life and religious liberty, and for families, things are happening already, and you're not going to hear much about most of them because these are not the topics that the national media is interested in or wants to report. If they're interested, they seem to always be interested the other way. You know, on the life issues, the first thing the president did the first day, and by the way, I got to chair the inauguration this time, which was a great opportunity to be out there and be able to be the first person to officially introduce the President of the United States, Donald Trump. And I will tell you, as I was thinking about that whole event from Election Day on, I just kept thinking, we'd been planning for 7 months. You know, this is about as vulnerable as our government ever gets. You've got most of the Congress, the President of the United States, the President-elect, the Vice President of the United States, the Vice President-elect, the Supreme Court, the new cabinet, every former president that could get there on several tons of plywood and lumber outside. If there is a bigger target anywhere in the world at that moment, I don't know what it would be. And so, of course, you're thinking about that all the time as you plan that event. And if you're in charge of the event, you're thinking about that every minute you're outside. And I know we were outside on Wednesday, just frankly just talking about how we get everybody off that platform in 2 or 3 minutes if suddenly we had to. And I remember as we were completing that discussion, I said, now, the one thing that we need to be absolutely sure that happens, if the president isn't sworn in yet, if the president-elect isn't sworn in yet, wherever he goes, somebody needs to be right behind him, preferably the Chief Justice, that can swear him in. Because if that's the kind of moment we're in, we don't need any question after noon who's officially going to make the decisions that have to be made. And I would say this, too. I've had a pretty good seat at these inaugural ceremonies for a while now, thanks to you and others. But that moment when one person accepts the responsibility to be the President of the United States and another person, suddenly their greatest responsibility is to figure out how to get out of the building and get wherever they're going next, it's an unbelievable moment. And the whole experience of that peaceful transition of power is something we do better than anybody else in the world, and it is more widely watched than possibly any other moment in the entire 4 years. We live streamed the inauguration this time for the first time, and 6.9 million people watched it on the live stream, which is the all-time record up till now for that particular medium. Another 45 million or so people watched it live, and millions more all over the world watched it. And no matter what we think about the current president or the past president, the one before that, for people all over the world to see that happen and see the way we do it, it's an unbelievable moment. You know, Washington believed that the inauguration of the second president would be a lot more important than the inauguration of the first president. One of the great pieces of wisdom that Washington brought to this job, just like when he left when he resigned as the commander of the army and went home, when they told George III that had happened, he didn't believe it, but he said, if that's true, with some skepticism in his voice, if that's true, he is the greatest man alive. And perhaps the greatest thing the greatest man alive did for the future of our country, if George III was true, was figuring out it was important to be president, but it was even more important to see the next person become president.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. That was Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri. Earlier today, we ended up our annual Watchman on the Wall pastor's briefing, and he was one of our speakers. We're going to hear the rest of what Senator Blunt had to say to the pastors when we come back, so don't go away. There's a lot more Washington Watch to come, including Rabbi Jonathan Cahn here on Washington Watch.
When you think of hot-button issues, what comes to your mind? For most of America's history, religious liberty was fairly uncontroversial. Not anymore. What happened? I'm Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council. Religious liberty is now a heated issue, right alongside topics like abortion and sexual identity. It's often placed in quote marks in news stories, as if there's more going on than really meets the eye. But what does religious liberty really mean, and why is this so controversial? The public discussion of what was once a tame topic is now a point of sharp division. How did we reach this point? A new FRC brochure entitled Religious Liberty, An Introduction to Our Freedom to Believe, simplifies this complex issue in an easy-to-read format. Discover the true meaning of religious liberty, who is affected by it, why it's being infringed, why you should care, and what you can do about it. You will find answers to these common questions at frc.org/religious liberty.
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. With a new administration in place, America is primed for change. Seize the moment to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Dr. Alveda King, Benjamin Watson, and many more. Plus, don't miss the opportunity to network and meet with organizations and other values voters to discuss the most pressing issues of our day, including religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, and more. On October 13th through 15th, join us for the premier conservative event in the country. Register now at the early bird rate of $99 until May 31st. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. In fact, at that website right now, you can find all of the speakers. You can get a link to all of the speakers who spoke at our annual Watchman on the Wall pastor's briefing. It was a great week, and I encourage you, go to TonyPerkins.com. Now, we're going to hear the rest of what Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri had to share with the pastors.
You get it, I get it, they didn't get it, but I think we're going to see that there is a big change there. Secretary Tillerson, I think soon, will, with the president, nominate an ambassador for religious freedom, that will be their job all over the world. We created that position, and truly, for the last 8 years, the opportunity there hasn't been fulfilled. Frank Wolf in the House and me in the Senate worked on a special envoy for Middle East religious freedom. Never has yet met the criteria that law clearly should allow that person to have as part of what they do. I talked to Secretary Tillerson about that. I think he understands the importance of those jobs. And, you know, the president's trip right now is a pretty amazing trip. Now, everything that you can come up with to question that will be questioned, but to go to Saudi Arabia and say in Saudi Arabia what he said about the future of Israel, to fly from Riyadh to Tel Aviv with everybody understanding that that is a totally acceptable thing to do as you bring those two worlds together, to be the first president of the United States to go to the Western Wall, all make a difference. All make a difference. The people that we've confirmed to the cabinet, the Secretary of Health and Human Services is pro-life. The Attorney General is pro-life. There is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development is. These are people of faith, and that, in my mind, is a good criteria, even though it's not going to be seen as the criteria it should. Let me mention two other things quickly. Congressman Walker mentioned the importance of the vice president and his influence on the government. You know, as we finished the campaign last year, I said over and over again, now, we don't know much about, truthfully, what a Trump administration is likely to look at. But the two best pieces of evidence so far that are on the table are the vice presidential nominee and that list of judges that he says he'll choose from for the Supreme Court. And I think the assurance that those things gave is being really fulfilled. Frankly, I don't think we'd be in the, my side would be in the majority in the Senate, and I don't think that the president would be in the White House if it hadn't been for the actual vacancy on the Supreme Court. There was something so much more focusing and riveting about that vacancy than if there was just, well, there's a likelihood the next president's going to appoint people to the Supreme Court. The vacancy made a difference. Antonin Scalia was a good friend of mine. We shared books. We saw each other with some frequency. I said to some group the other day that Justice Scalia served the country well in life, and as it turned out, he served the country well in death. If he would have known, I don't know how you'd make this choice, but I don't think he'd be disappointed by the impact that filling that position has. And it's important. You know, Scalia, the job we just filled with a 49-year-old man who 29 years from now will be younger than three judges on the court today, Scalia served for 26 years after the person that nominated him left the White House and 13 years after President Reagan died. You talk about long-term impact of somebody on the court in this case who we are confident will read the Constitution and the law and try to determine what it says, not what he thinks it should have said, will make a great difference. Let me mention three of my colleagues here quickly, too. I guess now I'm adding, so it's going to be four of my colleagues. Every month, five of us, five senators, meet with Family Research Council and the other pro-life, pro-faith, pro-family groups in Washington to talk about our agenda and how we can advance that common agenda. James Langford from Oklahoma joined me this year as a co-chairman, joined me last year, the first person besides me that ever actually volunteered to be somebody who'd meet with these groups every month. We recruited Joni Ernst, who is a terrific individual and absolutely committed to life as an issue, and that's her focus on the efforts that we make together. Steve Daines from Montana came up last year and said, could I be co-chairman of that group too? And we said, well, we just haven't had a lot of volunteers, but we are glad to have you. And then Luther Strange from Alabama, over as he came to the Senate, said, one of the things I'd like to do is to be one of the people that every month meets with these family-focused groups and tries to research that agenda. Things are happening. Things are different, but things will not happen on their own. Things will happen because of you, because of the people that you influence every week, because of your prayers, but maybe most importantly, because you put feet to your prayers. I am glad to be here with you today. Thank you all.
Again, that was Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, who is the co-chair of the Senate Values Action Team on Capitol Hill. We work very closely with him on shaping the values issues over in the United States Senate. Okay, still to come, Jonathan Kahn joins us after the break. He spoke to our pastors. He's a best-selling author, The Harbinger, The Book of Mysteries, and he'll be here. Right after the break, we'll hear what he had to say to the pastor. So don't go away. More Washington Watch is on the way right after this.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a five-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion. Imagine being threatened by the government for reading a magazine article. This is exactly what Don Vanderboon, owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, experienced when USDA inspectors threatened to shut down his operation because of reading material that they found in his company break room, which defended biblical marriage. Mr. Vanderboon's employees were well aware of the material and of the company's publicly stated Christian principles and had no objections. As we all know, religious liberty is an indelible thread woven into the fabric of America. Without it, the American experiment will fail. Yet time and time again, the freedom of Americans to believe and live out those beliefs has been attacked by government action. Now more than ever, our first freedom of religious liberty needs protection. Watch a special program hosted by FRC President Tony Perkins, where you'll hear from real people whose freedom to believe has been affected in real ways, including Mr. Vanderboon himself. Go to frc.org/believe to watch this special presentation. Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. With a new administration in place, America is primed for change. Seize the moment to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Dr. Alveda King, Benjamin Watson, and many more. Plus, don't miss the opportunity to network and meet with organizations and other values voters to discuss the most pressing issues of our day, including religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, and more. On October 13th through 15th, join us for the premier conservative event in the country. Register now at the early bird rate of $99 until May 31st. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Glad to have you on this Friday afternoon as we move into the Memorial Day weekend. We just finished earlier today the annual Watchman on the Wall pastor's briefing, if you're just joining us. And so what I decided to do, the speakers were so good, I didn't want to not let you hear them. So we've taken some of just a few. We heard from Congressman Mark Walker. We heard from Senator Roy Blunt. Now we're going to hear from Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. Of course, there's more speakers, and you can hear them all by going to tonyperkins.com and follow the link over. But for now, Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, best-selling author, The Harbinger, The Book of Mysteries. He's known for opening up the deep mysteries of Scripture. He leads Hope of the World Ministries, an international outreach of teaching, evangelism, and compassion projects for the needy. He has ministered throughout the world and on television and radio. He is a messianic Jewish believer, a Jewish follower of Jesus Christ. And here is what Rabbi Kahn had to say to our pastors.
It is written in 1 Chronicles 12:32. It says, "The sons of Issachar who understood the signs of the times and knew what Israel should do." The sons of Issachar, they knew what God was doing. And you of all people, you are leaders, pastors, ministers, watchmen, must especially know the signs of the time. How to live, how to lead, how to stand for such a time as this. What time is it? Where are we now? First, a word on where we have been. We've been witnessing a massive, long-term falling away of a civilization from God, from the ways of God, from the foundation on which it stood. The phenomenon has been taking place across Western civilization and much of global civilization, but with America, it's even more dramatic because America was uniquely founded on the Word of God and for the purposes of God. And so the fall is especially dramatic. We've been witnessing a clear long-term apostasy from the late 20th century. Now, there was another civilization founded on the Word of God that also fell away, and that was ancient Israel, founded for His glory, and yet in the midst of its blessings, it forgot the God of its foundation, turned away from Him, drove Him out of its public squares, out of its culture, brought in other gods, began to call evil good, and what was good evil. They profaned what was sacred. They called what was profane holy. They celebrated immorality. America was founded on the foundation of being a new Israel. But as ancient Israel fell away from God, so we have. We too have driven God out of our culture. We too have brought in God's idols. We too have called what is evil good and what is good evil. We've profaned what is sacred. And where Israel sacrificed thousands of its children, we have offered up millions of our unborn. We've set ourselves against the foundation on which we stand. And God warned Israel. God warns us. For those who know, this is what the harbinger reveals, that in the last days of Israel, there were signs given, warnings of judgment that have now appeared in America. But in recent times, that progression of apostasy has accelerated. Since I wrote the harbinger, in the past 8 years, America's spiritual fall has deepened, has accelerated. The last administration has led the nation in the championing killing the unborn. And not only inside America, but around the world. The administration labored to strike down laws ordained by God concerning woman, marriage, men, overturning those standards. In recent times, we have crossed lines that have never been crossed before. There's a date on the biblical calendar that marks calamity. It's called the 9th of Tammuz. On the 9th of Tammuz, the armies of Babylon, they breached the walls of Jerusalem, the protective walls, meaning the nation, the city was open now for judgment. On the 9th of Tammuz is a day that the Jewish people have mourned for 2,500 years. The hedge of a nation's protection is removed, that judgment can come. In 2015, the 9th of Tammuz fell on June 26th, on the day that the United States Supreme Court struck down marriage. As we know it, the protective hedge around the nation. On that same day, the President of the United States ordered the White House to be lit up in the colors of the rainbow to celebrate that striking down. But the rainbow does not belong to man. The rainbow belongs to God. It is the sign of His throne, His authority. And a nation that desecrates it is saying that the authority of God is not to be followed. It is not under God, and man is on the throne. The rainbow is a sign of His covenant and of His mercy to hold back judgment. A nation that breaks that is proclaiming it stands in defiance of the mercy of God. And this is not even to mention what happened to America and Israel in the last 8 years. Just before the administration ended, the president directed that America would abandon Israel at the United Nations in a resolution that declared that Jerusalem did not belong to Israel, but Israel was an occupying power. Listen, the United Nations is not the authority over Jerusalem. The EU is not the authority over Jerusalem, and the Obama administration is not the authority over Jerusalem. There's only one who's the authority over Jerusalem, and His name is the Holy One of Israel. And He's already issued His own resolution. It's called the Word of God. From the days of pagan Babylon and Rome to the Soviet Union, God's, when they persecute, when a nation or a culture persecutes the people of God, they've used the powers of state to coerce them to desecrate their faith. Now in America, under the last administration, it sought to use the powers of state to force believers to commit acts against the commandment of God, to honor what was unholy. Wherever it was raised that there should be exemptions for Christians or ministers, the administration fought to eliminate that exemption. The administration under Obamacare inserted abortion so that now companies would be forced to pay for the killing of the unborn. When Christian-owned companies said, "We can't take part," the administration sought to take them to court to force them. And when a Christian woman said, "I cannot partake in what the Bible calls an abomination," she was arrested, put in jail, and the administration put its blessing on it. More and more believers were being vilified, boycotted, taken to court, punished by the state. Believers stood on the brink of losing religious freedom. So the stakes in this last election were enormous. Nothing less than the sealing of the changes of the last 8 years against the gospel, against God's people, against freedom. It threatened to seal the future of America on abortion, on gender, on marriage, on religious freedom, on persecution, on the indoctrination of children, and overall on America's departure from God. The ball had already been rolling down the hill. And if the Democratic candidate had won, all those changes would be, in effect, sealed. On top of that, the Democratic Convention of 2016 was the most brazen in history. Sensing blood among the conservatives and sensing power, the convention no longer spoke of abortion in veiled terms, but proclaimed it from the rooftops. This convention vowed to repeal the Hyde Amendment, which had been in effect from the 1970s, that would mean that not only would unborn children be killed, but through our tax dollars, we would be paying for it. And it was expected that several judges would retire in the next 8 years. Had they been replaced by the Democratic candidate, it would be over. On every case from life to morality to biblical values to the indoctrination of children, it would have been over. And then there was the proclamation that said this quote, "Deep-seated religious beliefs must be changed. Why? So abortion would expand." Who said that? Not Joseph Stalin, not Chairman Mao, Hillary Clinton. And there were polls, all the polls after polls said that the Democratic candidate would win large and decisive. It looked hopeless. Many believers were preparing to live in a culture of persecution. And then the election took place. The media was in shock. The White House was in shock. The Democrats were in shock. The Republicans were in shock. And we believe even the one who won was in shock. What happened? Interesting. For those who know the mystery of the Shemitah, you know the year of 2015 into most of 2016 is basically the time of the Jubilee, the Hebrew Jubilee. The time of Jubilee, the trumpet sounds throughout the land. Well, there was a trump that sounded throughout the land. How's that for a segue? When I wrote The Harbinger, people don't realize, long before this election, I was led to put something in its page. I was led to put in Donald Trump. He's in there. I won't say where it is, but he is linked to that mystery. The Harbinger has not stopped. What happened? This election that went so totally against the odds that you saw experts actually apologizing on television for how wrong they were, it was the greatest political upset in modern times. And often when things go so against the odds, it's often a sign of God's hand. So what happened? One thing that happened is all across the land, there were believers and gatherings of movements of prayer praying for this nation. God is sovereign. He's never finished. But could there also be a 4,000-year-old mystery that also determined this election? Is it possible that what caused this was not Donald Trump, but actually a covenant? The Abrahamic covenant says, whatever you do to Israel shall be done to you. Reciprocity, whatever you do. A little over a year before the American election, there was an election, if you remember, in Israel. And Benjamin Netanyahu was running for re-election. Article after article came out that America, that Obama, was supporting a group dedicated to defeating Netanyahu. He was actually intervening in the election of a sovereign nation. But the Abrahamic covenant says, whatever you do to Israel will be done to you. So if you intervene in the election of Israel, well, then God will intervene in your election. If you seek to end the legacy of the leader of Israel, God will end your legacy. The Obama administration claimed that the Russians intervened. Well, maybe they did, but the intervention was much higher than the Russians. Now, there are all sorts of views on Donald Trump. From believers believe he's the answer to he's the problem. Has he lived an example of a Christian life or even a moral life? No, we got to be real. But on the other hand, can God use those who have not served him to serve his purposes? Absolutely, yes. If we want to understand the signs of the time, I'm going to show you something really amazing that'll reveal in clarity. God gives templates that give revelation in the Bible. It's the biblical template that's actually linked to the template of the Harbinger from the Northern Kingdom. When the nation's heading away from God, it's actually at the point where if it doesn't change, everything's going to get sealed with no interruption. But God is a God of surprises. You want to understand the phenomenon of Donald Trump, then understand the template of the man in the Bible called Jehu. The parallel is uncanny. The prophet Elisha sends one of the prophets to Ramoth-Gilead to anoint Jehu as king of Israel. So the young prophet goes to Ramoth-Gilead. Then the prophet pours the oil on his head and says, this is what the Lord God of Israel says. I have anointed you to be king over the Lord's people. You are to destroy the house of Ahab. God anoints him to intervene at a critical point in the nation's apostasy. to end the evil of Baal. What do we know about Jehu? He was a leader, but not a politician. He was a man of war, a man of conflict, a man of contrary, a man who's fighting all the time. He wasn't a gentleman, he was a rough man. Sound familiar? Jehu was a wild man. He was impulsive. He was unpredictable. You never knew what he was going to do. He was uncontrollable. He mounts his chariot and heads to the royal palace. He starts his race to power. He goes there to Jezreel to become king. Now listen to the report from the Bible. The watchman's watching him come. The lookout reported, he has reached them. He isn't coming back. It says, the driving is like that of Jehu, son of Nimshi. He drives furiously. The Hebrew word for furiously is the real word is shagah. What it really means is crazy. The way Jehu raced to the throne was crazy. And the way Donald Trump raced to the White House was crazy. It was insane. Believers were torn about Donald Trump. So too are the commentaries to this day. They say he was ruthless, he was boastful, he had ambition, but he was chosen by God to be used for his purpose. What about those believers who sought to uphold the ways of God, but they were torn about Donald Trump? Believe it or not, the temple even has something here. There was a man named Jehonadab. On the way to the throne, Jehu meets Jehonadab. Who was Jehonadab? He was the leader of the Rechabites. They were followers of God who kept themselves separate from the corruption of the day. Now think of the believers in America and those called by the media religious conservatives and evangelicals. Now think of what happened this past year between believers and Donald Trump. And basically the commentaries called the Rechabites, they called them conservatives, and they even religious conservatives of the time. Remember those critical meetings between Donald Trump and the believers and leaders of religious conservatives, if they could go along with him. Listen to what happens when Jehu and Jehonadab meet. Jehu greets Jehonadab and says, are you in accord with me as I am with you? In other words, I'm with you people. You who love the Lord, are you with me? And what happened in this election, conservatives decided to go with Donald Trump. Listen to the account. Jehonadab says, I am with you. Jehu says, give me your hand, come aboard the chariot. So they ride together into the capital city. So in this election, the conservatives, religious evangelicals, conservatives ride with Donald Trump, crazy race, but ride into the capital city. Now note, Jehu does not join with the conservatives at the beginning of the race, but towards the end of the race. That's what happened here too. So Jehu goes to the capital, and why does he go to the capital? To drain the swamp. It's true. Read the story. He's going to end, when he gets there, he's going to end the reign of the priests of Baal who go against the ways of God. He will destroy the temple of Baal. What did the worship of Baal mean? It meant the killing of babies. Donald Trump went to the capital city. First thing he does is undo the works of those before him in his first executive orders. He reestablished protection of the unborn. Defund the killing of the unborn. He promises to put a priority on Christians suffering persecution. Now the commentaries say this of Jehu. Jehu is exactly one of those men whom we are compelled to recognize, not for the good or great in themselves, but as instruments for destroying evil and preparing the way for good.
You've been listening to Rabbi Jonathan Kahn speaking to the annual Watchman on the Wall pastor's briefing that just wrapped up a few hours ago here in Washington, D.C., and I hope you enjoyed what he had to say. There were other speakers that we didn't have time to cover, but you can hear them. You can watch them all. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, out of time for today. I hope you have a great weekend, and I encourage you to take a moment and reflect upon the sacrifices that so many have made that have given us the benefit and the freedoms that we enjoy. Take time and thank God that we've had men and women willing to lay down their lives for us. Until next time, I encourage you as well to hear the words of the Apostle Paul, fresh and anew. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.